Hey, how are you today? Leo LaPorte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, all that jazz. 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number. 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. So come on. Give me a ring if you want to talk about technology. I guess we got to talk about right now about cell phones, because I told you, I said it many times. If there's any danger from radiation from cell phones or Wi-Fi, I'll let you know. And as I said many times, so far there isn't, but now there is. But it is not cause for concern yet. We're waiting for recommendations from the FDA and others. But there is some evidence that there may be, it can cause cancer in male rats. Not so sure about female rats. And as always with these kinds of studies, you know, they were exposed to a lot of radiation over a number of years, 2 years. But here's the thing that's interesting. The original study, this takes a little understanding about how this works. This is a federal study from the U.S. National Toxicology Program, NTP. And the NTP uses labels to indicate how strong the evidence is. There's the strongest, which is clear evidence, some evidence, equivocal evidence, and no evidence. When the original researchers produced their study, they labeled the evidence equivocal, which is the second lowest. Researchers couldn't be sure what radiation caused the tumors, or that the radiation indeed caused tumors. One problem is, the longer you go with these rat studies, the more likely they're just going to get tumors, because that's what rats do as they age. But then, interestingly, the studies, the pair of studies, went through what they call peer review, where you get a bunch of experts, people who are, in the field. And the peer review committee upgraded, which is very rare, upgraded the studies, the folks who did the studies, recommendation. And they upgraded it from equivocal evidence, in some cases, to clear evidence. Now, that's why it caught my attention, because clear evidence means they believe there is a provable link. So that is really interesting. This is the first study that's ever shown this. There have been a number of studies that have kind of hinted at, or maybe. So I guess the reason I bring this up is, you know, these have been passed now along to the Food and Drug Administration. The guy who designed the studies, a senior toxicologist with the National Toxicology Program, has retired. He retired almost 10 years ago. He retired a while ago. But he said, this is a double negative. It's unlikely that any future study could conclude with certainty that there is no risk to humans. He said at this point, it's going to be hard to say there is zero risk. It's hard still to prove that there is, how much risk there is, but no longer can we say there is no risk, or we can show there's no risk. He said, I don't think that's the case. He said he believes the FDA should put out indications to the public that you should, and these are his words, Ronald Melnick: maintain a distance from the cell phone device to your children. Don't sleep with the cell phone next to your head. And use wired headsets. And he thinks the FDA should do that right now. So I'm passing this along to you. I have to quibble with that last one, use wired headsets. And in fact, it kind of casts a little doubt now into this guy. Because a wired headset, if there's danger from the cell phone, putting a wired headset in your ear would not protect you from the cell phone. It would just conduct that radiation right into your ear. I don't know. I mean, maybe he knows more, something I don't know. But so this is interesting. the upgrade, particularly what's interesting is this never happens in peer review, that they usually they will downgrade or approve the study, but they will rarely upgrade the study. In other words, the researchers said the evidence was equivocal. We're not sure. And the peer review said, no, this is a good study. It's equivocal. We feel the data, when combined with our knowledge of the cancers and the design of the study, which we think is very good, we think this proves, or at least shows, a clear connection. So I just wanted to pass this along to you. What do you do now? I don't know. I'm still going to carry two cell phones in my pocket, one right next to my heart. Although some of the rats did get heart tumors, I should point out. The papers found there was clear evidence that exposure to cell phone radiation increases risk for a rare type of malignant tumor called a schwannoma in the connective tissues that surround the nerves around the heart. So, in the past we've always said this isn't possible, this is not likely, because it's what we call non-ionizing radiation. It's not like an X-ray. You know, you wouldn't have an X-ray machine carry around in your pocket. That'd be a bad idea. Or take too many X-rays, you know. But that's ionizing radiation. This radiation is considered too weak to do damage to cells. It's non-ionizing radiation. And that's why I've said, and many have said, and I've stuck by it until now, there's no danger from cell phones. But this might be something we want to pay attention to. This is a good study, and it did find some evidence. All right, so I just want to let you know, because I told you I was very clear. If this should happen, if we should see this, I'll let you know. Now my duty is done. Whew, okay, that's a little scary, isn't it? Don't sleep with one under your pillow. That probably seemed like good advice. Remember, as I've said many times, the distance between you and the cell phone is important. That this kind of radiation, all radiation, decreases by the square of the distance, which means it goes down really, really fast. So 1 foot might be sufficient. 2 feet might be sufficient. Keep it, you know, in your briefcase or your purse. Leah Laporte, the tech guy. There she is, Kim Schaffer, answering the phones. Have you been lifting weights? You look really strong.
I've been lifting buckets of ice and beer.
Another way to stay strong, buckets of ice and beer.
I tell you what, 7.5 hours working in a bar will keep you in shape.
You do that during the week?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, that's my new day gig.
Nice. I'll have to go and visit.
Yeah, you should come to
the club. Maybe we shouldn't get. Should we give out the name or no?
Oh, you can. It's the Mayflower in San Rafael, California.
Nice. I'm going to come down and harass you. I mean, visit you.
It's a great Irish English pub.
Oh, yeah, because you were so much fun on St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you spent some weekend time with us. That's very nice of you.
But I did get a little beach time this week on my days off.
Can you believe the weather we've been having?
Oh, it was gorgeous. So I drove out to Stinson and...
It's nice.
It's very nice. Got a little too red, though.
It's okay. It's okay. Yeah. So you've been answering the phones here.
Yeah. Nathan in Canada had an app show up on his Apple TV mysteriously, and he's wanting to know if Apple did that to him.
What? How could
he
that?
He can't get rid of it.
How could
so
that?
It sounds like Apple's right there.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. What could that possibly be? Nathan, where in Canada? Canada's a big place. Where in Canada?
New Brunswick.
New Brunswick.
In the east.
Nice. I know a little bit about Canada. You know, I used to go to Toronto every month to do a TV show up there.
Yeah, what'd you think of it?
Oh, I love Canada. And then when they moved the show to Vancouver, loved that too. Never been to New Brunswick, but, you know, there's always time.
Yeah. Did you have a preferred wireless carrier when you were out here?
You know, they're all terrible. and then I don't mean just they're all terrible in Canada. They're all terrible everywhere. I just brought my U.S. carrier up with me, although I worked for Rogers at the time. So I guess I'd have to say Rogers.
Yeah, I agree. I find they're the best out of the bunch.
The best of the bunch. Yeah. Yeah. What can you say? It's funny because you think that, well, the U.S. cell phone carriers are bad because they used to be a monopoly or something. But no, it's just as bad in Canada. It's no better.
Yeah.
What can I do for you today?
I came home one night and CTV, its Global Go app, had installed itself onto my
Apple. Oh, really?
Yeah. And I did a reset, like a factory reset on the Apple TV, and it didn't come back up right away. But then the next time I turned it on, it was back on. And it just seemed strange, whereas it's an Apple TV. I was wondering if you've heard of this, if it's normal. Or
that is very weird. Is it the Global Go app? Is that what it is?
It is. Yep, that's exactly what it is.
And is Global, is CTV your cable provider, your internet provider?
No, my internet's provided by Rogers.
So a competitor?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure how all that works, but you probably know more about that than I do.
So they made a big deal when Global Go was, you know, became available at the end of last year for the Apple TV. But I don't know of any reason why Apple would put it on there. The only apps Apple puts on there are their own apps by default. Is it possible that you have a family member? You are using Apple's family accounts?
No family accounts. I'm the only one in this house. The only thing on my Apple TV right now is the apps, like the Apple apps that Apple pre-installs on it, and this Global Go app right underneath them all.
Rogers does own CTV, so I'm wondering, although I don't know how they could do this, I'm wondering if your ISP is doing this to you, your cable company. That is very odd. But again, I'm a little at a loss because I don't know what's going on in Canada. I know in the U.S., the only TV apps Apple installs are the one new one is the TV app, which Apple put on there about 2 years ago. You've seen that as well. It became the default homepage because Apple had some ambitions of making an Apple TV a set-top box, replacing the cable company's box with an Apple TV. They went out to local television stations and networks and tried to persuade them of all of this, and they had no success, zero success. So all I can think of is that Apple does sync apps. If you install an app on your iPhone, do you have the Global TV app, the Global Go app on your iPhone or your tablet?
No, I have an iPad. I use an Android phone. I do have an iPad, but I've never touched the app at all.
Is it on your iPad?
No, on my iPad, no.
Because there is a setting. I would still do this. There is a setting in the Apple TV to not sync apps. And I would turn that off and then delete it and see if it goes away.
It is turned off. That's the other thing. I can't even delete it. Like it won't show up in the storage for me to even delete it.
Oh, wow. Well, at this point, if you really don't want it there, I mean, you might just live with it. But if you really don't want it there, reset the Apple TV, and that will get rid of it. It'll bring up just the default apps. Do make sure that the app syncing is turned off so that you don't automatically copy apps over. It may be you have it on your iPad and you just lost it. It's very easy to lose apps in the iPad. Hold down to get the search. You press the middle of the screen and pull it down a little bit, and you get the search. Search and make sure it's not on there. But if it's coming back after you reset, that's a mystery. I'm only going to have to – all I can do in that case is – say to our Canadian listeners who have Apple TVs, is that happening to you? Is this something Apple is doing? That does not seem... I mean, as I said, I think Apple has ambitions in this area, and maybe they've made a deal with CTV to do this, but it's certainly not a thing that happens in the U.S., right? Somebody in the chat room said, same thing happened to me, but I was able to delete it. Let's see, it's a bug. It's a feature. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Actually, Scott Wilkinson coming up. It's time for Scott Wilkinson. He is our home theater guru, home theater geek from avsforum.com, where he's the editor. And he's just back from the 21st century.
Later in the 21st
Later in the 21st century. When it, so Ready Player One, the new Steven Spielberg movie based on the beloved Ernest Cline novel Ready Player One.
Which Cline, is only from 2011.
I know. It's not old,
that old.
Yeah. It's very cinematic. You know, when you read the book, it's very cinematic. And so I think the they probably optioned it immediately. It has to do with virtual reality, so it's very timely.
Yep.
But it is. It's so. This is it the near future? I don't remember what year it is.
It is. It's the year 2045.
2045.
So it's about 27 years from now, and the world has gone to hell in a handbasket, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
And the escape is to go into this virtual world. So people are poor, and yet they have they can afford the power to run a virtual reality and you know enter into it with their VR gear and stuff. The way that they solved the moving around in the virtual world problem, I thought was brilliant.
So that's a problem right now if you use VR.
It is. Yeah,
because none of the current VR kits, the Vive is the most flexible. But the Vive, you make a space that's like 10 feet by 10 feet. It's got two sensors that are up on the wall. You can move around within there. But if you had to walk across a parking lot in virtual reality, you couldn't do it. Yeah, you can only go a few feet.
Right.
And so all of the games out now are have this kind of dopey thing where you maybe use the controller and point it where you want to go, and you press the button, and then you go, whoop, and you're there.
Yep.
They've got
yep.
a better way of doing it in the future.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. In this movie, that the way that that's depicted is actually very clever.
Well, I've seen – I think you could say – because maybe – I don't want to spoil it, but we've seen trailers. We've seen people, for instance, get inside of what looks like a thing, and then they're really – in the virtual world, it's a much more elaborate, you know, thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's basically an omnidirectional treadmill.
Oh, that's so dopey. Okay, go.
Cool.
Those exist. Those exist now. I've seen them. You can get on them now. Yeah. Okay. Good.
Really? Okay. So you stand
this
on
is,
that.
By the way, something nobody talks about with virtual reality. They all act as if you can move around. You can't.
Right.
So I'm gonna buy a omnidirectional treadmill.
Yes.
Okay.
And put it in your crappy apartment.
Put it in my crappy apartment. By the way, Vive, of course, is the official virtual reality headset of Ready Player One. So there's Vive all over the place. Yeah.
All right. Well, I think it's an entertaining story, as you've heard, and I'm sure everyone has heard. It is chock-a-block with references to mostly the 80s geek culture.
Yeah, Iron Giant is in it, which is hysterical. The problem is, this will appeal to my kids who are in their 20s, but I was, the 80s.
This was a question that I wrote. I have a review up on AVS Forum, and one of the questions I posed is, how do teenagers today, which is a large part of where the movie is aimed, how do they even know some of these 80s references, much less teenagers in 2045? How will they be so intimately familiar with 60-year-old references?
Yeah.
You know, how many 60-year-old references would you be familiar with if you saw them? Not that many. Some, a few, maybe.
Well,
but
60 years old.
Well,
the 80s
in 2045.
Oh,
they
would be. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, no, that's kind of the conceit of it all, isn't it? That for some reason they just have this, you know, it's as if we had nostalgia for the 20s or something.
Exactly. Which we do, but do we have intimate, detailed, trivia knowledge of the 20s?
Maybe that's what history studies in the future.
Maybe.
Well, that's depressing.
Now, what I have to say is I saw it in Dolby Vision, as I usually do, at a Dolby Cinema, and with Dolby Atmos sound.
Did you see it in 3D?
No, it was in 2D. But I will have to say this. I think that this movie is one of the few that I would probably go see again in 3D.
Really?
Because, for one thing, VR is all 3D. It has to be, because you put on these glasses or the goggles, the headpiece, and you've got a little display for one eye and a little display for another eye. It's all 3D in virtual reality. So,
I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, so it would make some sense. Now, this is a conversion. Steven Spielberg shot it in 2D, and then a company called StereoD converted it to 3D. So that can work very well. That's what they did with Titanic, and I thought it worked beautifully in that case. So it's possible to make a good 3D movie by converting a 2D movie.
Right.
So I might very well go see it again in 3D. I know you don't like 3D, and I don't necessarily think it's not necessary. Even in 2D, the visuals are so gorgeous, just beautiful. One thing that really struck me amazing was the, you know, how when you have animated humans, most of the time in animated movies, they look obviously animated, right? They're obviously cartoons. And as you try to make animated humans, faces in particular, that look closer and closer to real,
Uncanny Valley.
They enter what's called the Uncanny Valley, and they start looking really
uncanny.
Exactly. Yeah. They start looking really creepy. The great example I know of that was the Polar Express.
Yes.
With Tom Hanks.
Tom Hanks.
Oh, man, those faces, they tried to make them look real, and they were just, creepola.
Yeah.
Now, in this movie, Ready Player One, I think they've gotten a whole heck of a lot closer. What I wrote in the review was that they're way far up the slope of the Uncanny Valley. Wow. And the way that they blended CGI, computer-generated imagery, and live action, I thought was just beautiful.
Okay.
Just seamless. Absolutely seamless.
Now, this is a lot of mocap. That was shot natively in 4K HDR, 3D, and all that.
Actually, no. It was not shot natively in 3D, certainly. Nor was it shot in 4K natively. It was shot partly on digital cameras, on Arri Alexas, which have a native resolution of only 2.6K, something like that. So it's closer to 2K. Plus, all the CGI was undoubtedly done in 2K because
CGI in 4K.
They don't. It costs too much.
That's
it's
the
too
computer
much
generated
power.
Graphics. But
correct.
I guess if they quadrupled the resolution, it would take quadruple the time.
Correct.
To make each frame and then quadruple correct. The money.
That's exactly right.
I did not know. I just assumed that.
So CGI, any CGI is rendered in 2K.
Really?
And they might up convert it to a 4K master, a 4K DCP, digital cinema package, that gets distributed to the theaters. They might do that. And they might have done that in this case. I don't know what the DCP was in this case. But even the movie itself was shot partly in roughly 2K digital. The other part of it was shot on 35mm film. And they could have scanned.
What is that? Is that because Spielberg just likes film?
I don't know. It could very well be. Could very well be. Now they did.
This is taking nostalgia for the 80s way too far.
Oh, we shot it on 35mm film.
Oh, yeah, man.
Oh, look at that film.
The most fun of this movie, for me anyway, was looking for all the references.
Oh, yeah.
You won't catch them all. And there's even some in the musical score.
This
there are
a
few
game
little melodic fragments.
Sure. This was a game with the trailer, and I think that you had to go and watch a YouTube video if you wanted to see all of them.
Exactly.
I mean, people couldn't find. There were tons of them.
I mean, the quest in the movie is for an Easter egg, and all of these references are Easter eggs in and of themselves.
Oh, that makes sense. Okay.
It's pretty cool. It's really cool.
All right.
And
well, you talked me into it. I'm going to go see it tonight in an Atmos theater. We don't have Dolby Vision HDR, unfortunately. But
that's too bad.
Next week, let's talk about Dolby Vision HDR coming to the Apple TV, a big upgrade.
You bet.
Yeah. Scott Wilkinson, you'll find his work and all of his stuff at avsforum.com, and he's here each week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. and Canada. I haven't seen that Ready Player One, but it's the geek thing to do, so I guess I'll go see it tonight and try to enjoy it. I am a bad geek. I guess in a way I'm going to stand up for the fact that you could say I'm a geek. I'm a techno nerd. I'm a tech enthusiast, and I'm not a fan of, let's say, Ready Player One, which is, you know, heresy. I'm not even a big fan of Star Wars and Star Trek. I know. I like sci-fi, but I like to read it. I don't like to watch it on the screen because I've always felt like you can do more with your mind than you can ever any movie company could do on a screen, right? It's why I like radio, right? I've worked at TV an awful lot, and we even do video of this show to this day. But I've always found that your imagination is better. And radio is better for describing abstract concepts, too. You know, in TV, this always made me crazy when I worked in TV. If you're going to talk about something like networking, most of computing, if you're talking about it, when you're talking about stuff that happens inside the computer, there's no pictures. And, of course, you can't have TV without pictures. And that's why whenever they talk about computing subjects, they have these almost virtually nonsensical, they call it B-roll. It's the video pictures they put up on the screen just so that there's something. They're placeholders. You've seen it many times of a guy holding a mouse, right? They have a picture of somebody typing at a computer. They have a close-up of his hand on the mouse. I can't tell you how many times I've had to get that shot so that we could do a video piece about technology. Or they show, there's a whole Reddit forum, which is hysterical, of screens from TV shows and movies that are supposedly, you know, real computer screens, real computer code. And it's a hoot. I think the name of the subreddit is, it's a Unix computer. And they just never get it right. So I kind of like the idea. I prefer science fiction with my eyes closed, I guess. Actually, I really like there was a great, there was a great BBC dramatization of Star Wars that was quite good. And I think it even had Mark Hamill in it. And you close your eyes, those starships, they look so real. You go and you look at them on the screen, well, I don't know. 8888 Ask Leo, line 2, Dar in Hollywood. Hello, Dar.
Hello there, Leo.
Welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
I just would like to say that I date back to the screensavers. And
you know, I was we're big anniversary coming up for the screensavers in Tech TV. The screensavers, Tech TV, Call for Help, all launched May 11th, 1998, 20 years ago in May.
Okay, now I'm feeling old. Thank
yeah.
You.
Well, what about you're old? What do you think I feel? You were at least a kid when you saw it.
Yeah, there you go. Uh-huh. My question is, I do a monthly video internet show that streams on Facebook, on Ustream, and Livestream.
How nice. What's the name of it?
It's called NitroReports.com.
This is, I mean, you know, we talk about TV, but network television is terrified of people like you. You're completely undermining everything that they do because you're doing a TV channel, basically, using free distribution on YouTube and Twitch and Facebook. That's awesome.
Live stream. Well, the part I'm trying to figure out is how do I get it? I don't find any key or any gateway that will allow me to get it onto YouTube and stream live.
So we stream live on YouTube. I don't know how hard it is. I think really maybe the issue is that what do you use? What tool do you use? You're streaming live on Facebook now, right? Is that where's the first place you stream live? The primary source of it?
Ustream and Livestream.
Okay. So with Ustream, you use an encoder that sends it off to Ustream, right? You have a log.
I actually hire a studio in North Hollywood. That has all those capabilities. The one part we haven't been able to figure out is do I need to set up my own channel there?
Yeah.
I hear that.
You need to set up a YouTube account. You need to set up, that's true too, but it won't take long. So what you do to stream live, what you do first is you set up a YouTube account for Nitro Reports, which you probably already have, don't you?
No.
Oh, well, step one. And then you put videos on there. You can't do it live yet. You put videos on there. You have to get, I think it is 1,000 subscribers and 4,000 viewed hours. It's not hard. You will hit that fast.
Well, for one of our shows this year, we had 22,000 people watch it.
Yeah. No, it's going to be easy. And then once you qualify by the number of subscribers you have and the number of hours of television watched, you'll see it's very easy. And the studio, I presume, if the studio is already doing live stream for you in Twitch and Facebook, then it wouldn't be hard for them to also stream to YouTube.
Okay.
Basically, the way these work, all of them work the same way. They have an endpoint that you send transcoded video to. And
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So really, mostly, you can't get the endpoint until you qualify. You can't qualify until you get the YouTube account. So you got your first step. But what is the website NitroReport.net? Is that it?
Nitro Reports, R-E-P-O-R, NitroReports.com.
.com.
We've been doing it for about 3 years.
It's about cars, right?
It's about drag racing.
Nitro-fueled funny cars, to be exact.
That's correct.
NitroReports.com. Oh, man. You know, this, I've been telling you, ESPN viewing is down. You know that, right? And I fully believe it's because of all the sports stuff, all the great sports content you can consume via podcasts, YouTube, Twitch, all of this.
Trying to make it really specific that this is
perfect.
Like a couple of guys sitting around at the end of the day drinking a beer in the trailer after the racing's finished.
This is my experience as also with podcasting. We've been quite successful over the past 15 years doing podcasts. And the secret to success is kind of the opposite. And this is what really baffles mainstream broadcast. The mainstream broadcast, your goal is to hit the largest possible audience. So you dumb everything down, you dilute everything so that it's offensive to the least number of people, and you get the largest audience. We're going the exact opposite way. You target, you super serve an audience. You target an audience, a niche audience, and you serve, you give them the best, and they can't compete in mainstream media.
And we've got advertisers.
And of course you do, because people know what they're getting with you, right? They know exactly who they're getting.
It's very narrowcast.
It's narrowcast. That's the success. By the way, is your show released on Sunday?
No, it's on Tuesdays.
All right, well, that's all right. We can adjust. Hey, I think you're brilliant. You're right. This is the way to do it nowadays. And I see so many programmers on YouTube emulating mainstream television. No, that's the mistake. Go narrow. Go narrow or go home.
I've been amazed at the way that the audience has grown and the way that people are now recognizing us.
Think about why, right? The reason why is if somebody's really into Funny Car, into Nitro, they're going to tell their friends, all the friends who are into it, you've got a natural audience. It just happens naturally. Plus, they're super enthusiastic because you're serving them. It all makes sense. Good going. NitroReports.com. And just create that YouTube account and you're on your way. I honestly believe that. Our show today brought to you by, speaking to somebody on their way, Carbonite, the backup leader. I don't even want to use the word backup anymore. Data protection, that's a better word. Carbonite protects your data in the most difficult environment of all, business. Yeah, because business has, well, first of all, every minute you're down is revenue lost, so it's critical that you get back up and running. Plus, businesses have complex IT environments, multiple servers, multiple users, endpoints all over the place. Carbonite's ready. Take a look at their solutions like Carbonite Recovery. It's disaster recovery as a service that keeps your critical systems online with near zero downtime. That's what you need. Push-button cloud failover with RTOs measured in minutes. Your data is always current because synchronization is constant. Recovery points are never more than a few seconds old. You've got orchestration for those complex multi-tiered IT environments. You've got automation and custom script points. Data is constantly replicated and secure with AES 256-bit encryption in flight and at rest. And, of course, expert professional services from the great folks at Carbonite at every stage, from deployment to testing to failover and back. Learn more about Carbonite Recover and the Carbonite Data Protection Platform at Carbonite.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. More calls right after this. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers and the internet and home theater and digital photography, smartphones, smartwatches, anything with a chip in it, anything in this wild world around us that technology is changing so much. And, you know, it's funny because I've been doing this little technology thing for some time, as you may know. Started doing a technology radio in the early 90s. I'm practically as much of a nostalgia piece as Ready Player One. but in the earliest days of it, it was really a utopia we were talking about. An amazing world that was going to change so dramatically. And, you know, we weren't far off. I mean, the internet has brought some amazing things, technology and science have brought some amazing things to the 21st century. We live in remarkable times, and it's very easy to take for granted all the great things that have happened. But we're very much aware, I think, these days of some of the worst things that have happened. A lot of talk these days about what they call surveillance capitalism. I'm going to have to give credit to Shoshana Zuboff, who's a professor at the Harvard Business School for that. She's writing a book which will be out this summer called Surveillance Capitalism, which really is about companies like Facebook and Google, Amazon, that make money not just from selling goods, as Apple does, or even Amazon does, but from selling your information. And Amazon is a big, believe it or not, big advertising company. A lot of their revenue comes from advertising. Certainly all of Google's revenue and Facebook's revenue comes from advertising. And, well, frankly, all my revenue comes from advertising. There's a little bit of a difference. I don't know anything about you at all. Radio hasn't figured out. We haven't figured out a way to kind of follow your every footstep and figure out everything there is to know about you. Unfortunately, the internet has given, and I'm sad because I am excited about these technologies. I feel so positive about them, but it has also given tools to marketers and advertisers to track you in, you know, to the nth degree. And advertisers love it. I don't blame them. I would love it too if I were an advertiser. And it's why pretty much 80% of all the advertising money being spent these days goes to two companies, Facebook and Google. They can tell advertisers more than anybody else can. I don't even, you know, truth is, I don't even mind that. If what I'm going to get is ads that are tailored to my interests, I don't mind that. That's fine. What I don't want, and I think what is more of a problem, is advertisers who take advantage of it to advertise to somebody, for instance, who's depressed. Yeah, Facebook knows your psychological state pretty well. And they can sell ads to you on your psychological state. I don't mind if somebody sends me an ad because I've looked at advertisements for tires before, or because I live in Northern California for, you know, products Northern Californians would like, or because of my age, products somebody of my age would like. I don't mind that. That makes sense. But if it's based on things like my psychological profile, that bothers me. That's where Facebook really has gone too far. And then, of course, there's the much larger and much more scary issue of what governments might do with that kind of information. Because they're not, now we're not talking advertising. In Holland, in the Netherlands, before World War II, it was the practice, and considered a benign practice, for every citizen to register. And one of the things they registered was their religious affiliation. And there were great books stored in all the city halls all over Holland with all the citizens and their religious affiliation. Not a problem until the Nazis took over and used those books to persecute Jews. In fact, there's some very famous stories about people trying to burn those books and destroy them before the Nazis came to town, but they weren't effectively done, and they became a real tool for religious persecution. And that's the kind of thing we really want to watch out for with surveillance capitalism. So this utopia that I was very excited about 20 years ago, 30 years ago, has turned into, in some ways, a nightmare. But I don't want us to throw out the baby with the bathwater. There's still plenty of wonderful, amazing things we're getting from technology. And, you know, Mark Zuckerberg always points to, oh, look at the connections you're making. And that's true. That's why people are reluctant to give up Facebook, because of these connections. There is value to that. So what we really need to do, in my opinion, is call on Facebook to just be more careful about what they do with our information. And maybe as users, we have to be more prudent with what kind of information we give out. Part of the problem is Facebook doesn't tell you what they can find out about you. And we're learning that they have been very aggressive in collecting data. For instance, Facebook Messenger, they've stopped now, but took advantage of kind of a loophole, a leniency in Android to record every phone call made, not the audio, but just the time of the phone call and who you were calling in your phone. People found that out because they downloaded their Facebook data and found that information in their Facebook data. Facebook probably, had they known, they probably would have expurgated that information. It's good they didn't. And who knows what other stuff they are deleting in your Facebook data. It makes me nervous. You know, we should certainly be careful about what we put on Facebook and other sites. But there's also information we unwittingly give up. Your Facebook likes. If you check the wrong box on your phone and Facebook collects your call information. Religious affiliation, for sure. But there's lots more you're giving away. And frankly, let's not forget that from your searches on Google, which, of course, Google does keep track of, we've learned, researchers have shown, you can find out all sorts of stuff. There's a very famous case where AOL, for research purposes, anonymized a ton of search information, anonymized it like crazy. You know, there's no names in here. And yet, an intrepid newspaper reporter who got the database legally, because Facebook was, or AOL was giving it away so people could do research, tracked down a person based on the search information alone. Just on the search information alone. And if you think about it, you're giving away so much information about who you are. Your searches are unique to you that in many cases, as even if it is anonymized, even if no name is attached, people could figure that out. So just be aware. I think we need to be aware of it. We live in a situation where people, there's strongly incented by advertising to collect as much information as possible. They do. They are not, perhaps, as Facebook has not been as cautious with that information as they ought to. They let people have it that shouldn't have it, like the Russian government. So they need to be held to account. But, you know, ultimately, I think we need to understand that we are talking about ourselves a lot more on the internet, even if you don't think you are, and be a little careful about it. I was going to play for you a, well, I could play for you real quickly. Be careful. This is the silly season for tax scams. Here's a voicemail my wife got yesterday.
Message: I want you to return the call as soon as possible, as IRS has filed a lawsuit against your name. The local county sheriff are going to arrest you for 4 serious allegations before this matter goes to the courthouse and you get arrested. For more information.
Now, I want to say right up front, Lisa has no problem with the IRS. This is not from the IRS. The sheriffs are not on their way to arrest her. They want you to call this number. I'm not going to play the rest of it because I don't want you to hear the number. It's a scam. Be prepared for the next 2 weeks. Nothing but scams from the IRS. And they're, listen to how that was designed to scare the heck out of her. The sheriffs are on their way to arrest you. Quickly call this number. Don't be fooled. Don't let your brains go out the window because of your fear. They always use fear to take advantage of you. That's a scam. The IRS does not call. The IRS does not email. They use the U.S. Postal Service. Oh, man, oh, man. Our show today brought to you by my great friends at IT Pro TV. Ah, Lee, I love these guys, and I love what they've done. Tim and Don created IT Pro TV for one simple reason, to help people get jobs in IT, and then once they have a job in IT, to keep their skills up. If you were to pick one area in this country that there were more job openings for than any other, it would be in IT. There are 1 million area of IT alone, security, IT security, keeping networks safe. There are 1 million open jobs right now. 1 million. So get those skills, get those certs, and get that job. And IT Pro TV is the most fun and friendly way to get the skills you need. 125 hours of live content every week with a chat room. So, and they're fun to watch. They're great presenters, very knowledgeable in every area of IT. And then, of course, once they do it, they put it in their on-demand system, more than 3,000 hours of on-demand IT training. Every possible subject: Azure, Office 365, Windows 10, CompTIA, Agile, and more. No need to go off-site for the best training. You can get it all at home or at work. I want you to visit itpro.tv/Leo. Use my name, Leo. You'll get 7 days free. You can see what I mean. And by the way, if you decide to subscribe, 30% off your monthly membership for the lifetime of your active subscription. Friendly training, binge-worthy content, and a proven ROI. Where else? itpro.tv/Leo. Don't forget to use the code Leo. Premium subscriptions, corporate memberships also available. itpro.tv/Leo. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. We have a great website. It's free. There's no sign up. I don't collect any information about you. I don't want it. TechGuyLabs.com. That's where all the show notes are. The tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo, the phone number. If you want to talk high tech, I'm here to talk high tech with you. Line three, John in Boston, Massachusetts. Hey, John.
Hey, how are you, Leo? How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Good. We listen to you, my dad and I. He's 86, and you're the only guy that could get him listening to technology. I've tried many different people, but something with you clicks with him. I don't know what
great.
It is.
Well, please thank him. That's really great, John. Thank you.
Yeah, and what we're trying to do here for him is trying to get him involved with computing. I was thinking about an iPad Pro, the 12.9-inch, and a lot of people say maybe that could replace a laptop these days.
Yep. Well, let me tell you my own experience. My mom, who lives nearby in Cranston, Rhode Island, is 86 also. Actually, she's 85. She'll be 86 in January. And she is, of course, because she's my mom, got all the latest stuff. She has an iPhone, an iPad, a 12-inch iPad, one of the big ones. She has a MacBook. She has an iMac. I even, going back to Windows 2000 days, she's had Windows PCs, mostly because her son just makes her do it, right?
Yeah.
But she two things she loves, and we've had her on our shows to talk about it, actually. She loves her 12-inch iPad. You know, the only issue would be vision, because, of course, and you know, just take him to an Apple store and look at it. Make sure that he can read it. You can make text bigger on the websites and so forth. But sometimes if vision is a problem, that might be an issue. The other thing I don't like about the iPad, it doesn't have a keyboard, but you can always get a case with a keyboard for it. Or you could look at the other option if you wanted a keyboard would maybe be a Chromebook. I think that's also very good, not just for seniors, but for everybody. Chromebooks are super secure. If you go to a hacker convention like DEF CON, the only laptops you'll see will be Chromebooks, because they're the only ones that are safe to use in an environment that's a hacker rich. So that's another good choice if he needs a keyboard. And there are many more form factors with the Chromebook as well. They make Chrome boxes that attach to big screens. So if he needs a bigger screen or likes more real estate on the screen, you can do that. And all the Chrome OS devices have keyboards. But like I said, you can always get a keyboard with an iPad. I find an iPad's great for seniors who just want to do a little light typing on email, because they can do that on the screen. And mostly are web surfing, maybe banking, shopping, that kind of thing.
Right. Do these iPad Pros now have any kind of file system?
Sort of, but not really. The idea Apple has is, well, why do you want a file system? You don't. That just confuses people. Every app has its own files, and there is file sharing between apps, but that's considerably constrained. Apple does now have a files app that lets you kind of look at files, but not in the same general way that a desktop operating system like Mac or Windows does. So, I think their position is not inaccurate. I think file systems are kind of an abstraction that's a little more difficult to grasp for non-techies.
And you believe that the iOS is the future for Apple?
Yeah, I'm really sad about this, but Apple's completely made this clear in their actions, if not in their words, that the future for them is iOS, not Mac OS. A Mac is not. My mom loves her MacBook. I gave her a MacBook our last trip out there, and she really likes it. But I noticed she uses the iPad more. I said there's two things she likes, and this is another one to consider with your dad. She loves her Amazon Echoes because she can talk to them, which is a more natural interface. And for listening to music or podcasts or news, there really is no better situation. But she even uses it in kind of novel ways. For instance, it takes a while for her water to heat up for her shower, so she'll use Echo to set a timer for like a minute. She'll go turn on the shower and then set the timer, and then it'll let her know when the shower is ready. So that she's actually been able to really use it, I think, quite well.
And I got to mention that I always see the Google Pixel Book next to your left there. I was wondering, is that compact? Because they're around roughly about $1,000.
These are too expensive. Yeah, these are too expensive. This is not something I recommend. I just like it.
Yeah.
It's for people who are all in on Chrome OS that they want an Intel processor, and you know they don't mind spending $1,000 for it. It is the creme de la creme of Chromebooks. But frankly, for $500, the next step down, the $500, the mid-range Chromebooks are very nice, and I would say a $500 Samsung Chromebook Plus is an excellent choice. And that has a stylus, too, if he likes to draw. So, you know, you've got to kind of think about what Dad's going to be doing with it. Touch is really natural. And if he's not a techie at all, touch can often be a really great entree into technology. He's not a techie at all?
Well, you know what he likes to do? He likes Turner Classic Movies, and he likes to stream. I'm teaching him all that.
Perfect.
You can do this now. And I heard the iPad Pro has one of the best 120-hertz screens you can buy.
It's a gorgeous screen. I don't know if you'll get 120. I know you won't get 120-hertz when you're watching Netflix or Turner Classic Movies, because they don't serve it as 120-hertz. But you will get 120-hertz when you scroll, for instance, in a browser, and that just makes it much crisper. It is, the iPad screen, there's nothing like it. They've really done a great job. Take him to the Apple Store in Boston. There's a nice one. And just say, Dad, look at these. And can you is it comfortable for you? I think 12 inches. Remember, a 12 inches, if you're just, a foot away from it, is like a giant screen TV. Sound quality is superb on it. He can always wear headphones with it as well. My mom uses it with her hearing aids because iOS works with some hearing aids, and so she can hear the audio through her hearing aids if she wants. We use FaceTime all the time on it, and if you ever think you'll FaceTime your dad, this is a great, easy to use, and the audio comes through her hearing aids or headphones, so she can hear quite clearly. It really is a great way to communicate as well.
And how about going the Android route with tablets? Is that
No, I wouldn't.
No.
Android and tablets have not been a good match. There is a new Chrome OS tablet from Acer that really, it's $329. It looks like Google just wanted to have something to compete with Apple's announcements in education this week. I wouldn't recommend it. You want, the reason you get a Chromebook is because you want something more like a laptop with a keyboard.
Right.
Look at the Chrome boxes as well, though, and the Chrome all-in-ones, because Chrome OS has a lot of different. So if he wants a bigger screen or more of a desktop style, you can do that with Chrome OS, too. The nice thing about Chrome OS is you can't break it, and it's totally secure. But I think that's true of iOS as well. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
With me you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab, and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen,
here we go.
I've traveled every road in this here land.
He's been everywhere. He's Johnny Jett, our traveling guy. He's back home in beautiful Manhattan Beach, where the weather was spectacular yesterday. Johnny, I hope you got to enjoy a little bit of it.
Were you here yesterday?
No, but I know. I know, because I see all in, well, no, we had beautiful weather up here, too, so I figure it must be.
You had beautiful weather. Actually, down by the beach, it was foggy yesterday.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And cold.
And chilly. Oh, my goodness.
Well, when I say cold, I mean like 61.
We went into San Francisco on Thursday, and it was 80 degrees.
I saw that on my.
Crystal clear.
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah. That's really unusual in San Francisco. So we had a good time.
Well, last week I was in South Carolina, and it was chilly there, too. Yeah.
Weather. What are you going to do? But that's, you know, part of
traveling. Then I went down to Florida.
Yeah, and that's always hot.
And that was warm.
Yeah. Well, it's good to see you back home. So you've been in South Carolina. What was that for?
I was there for that Singapore Airlines delivery
flight. That's
right.
You were here. Where did they end up flying you to?
So I didn't go. I was supposed to go, but it was a 23 and a half hours on the plane.
What?
You couldn't get off for 23 and a half hours.
What? They went around the world. That's around the world. Where did they go?
Well, they're going to Singapore, which is halfway around the world. It's, wow. I think it's 11,000 miles. 11,000 miles.
Oh, what fun.
And so that flight went from South Carolina, Charleston to Osaka. They landed at 2:30 in the morning. The airport's closed, so you can't get off. So they're there for 2 hours to refuel.
Oh, that's why.
And that's another
so
6 hours to Singapore.
Yeah, so, you've got a family. You don't get to do those things.
I just don't want to be that far away from my boy.
Yeah,
and if they let me off in Osaka, I would have gone, because I'm just 10 hours away.
Well, but it looked like a beautiful. I saw your pictures. It looked like a beautiful plane.
Oh, it really is. And, wow. And that's only going to fly medium haul, that plane. It's a new 787-10.
Uh-huh.
And so it's 18 feet longer than the 787-9 series. So,
Dreamliner. Beautiful.
Yeah. But
there's so much technology in those. It would be so great for this show or one of our other shows if I could somehow get somebody to show me the technology in those.
I CC'd you on an email to their head of communications who wants to do screensavers with you.
Well, then I'm all in. You know me.
So
I read
email
once a week, so I'll check it now.
Okay, well, check your email.
Thank you.
James Boyd is the name.
Nice.
Great guy.
How exciting.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Johnny. Now, Johnny joins us each week not merely to talk about his travels, as wonderful as they are, but to help us travel better with technology.
So I got a website for you, and it's an app.
Okay.
So it's called Luggage Hero. Have you heard of this one?
No, but I like it already.
Okay, good.
What is Luggage Hero?
This was founded in 2016 in Copenhagen, and then in 2017 they expanded to London, and now they're in 250 locations. So companies can sign up with these guys, and they'll say, okay, businesses will store people's bags.
What? Like they do.
So
at
let's
the
say
hotel,
you go to New York City,
yeah,
and you're on a long layover,
yeah,
and you don't want to hang out at the airport for 12 hours, but you want to go into town,
but you don't want to check into a hotel.
Exactly. So you can find these places that will store your bag. Usually in New York City and in most cities, it's about $2 an hour.
This is great.
I don't know why I didn't think of this. So
yeah, I bet you. I mean, they could extend this beyond just luggage stores. But
for sure. It's not luggage stores. I mean, it's all kinds of stores.
Oh.
Some of them are hotels.
Oh, of course.
And they give you up to $2,000 insurance for each bag, but they make sure to tell you, and you should never put anything valuable in check bags, such as, jewelry, camera, electronics, or medicine. And that's a big, a lot of older people, they check their medicine on flights, and you don't ever want to do that, because if they lose your bag, I can't say it on radio, but, you're not.
Keep your stash with you, kids.
Place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Always carry it on.
Yep.
So, and same thing goes for this. Don't put anything valuable in there, your passport, things like that. And another thing that people need to make sure they protect very carefully is their passport. Passports on the black market are worth up to $5,000.
Ooh. Yeah, so, I have my special. I'm wearing my Scotty Vest travel jacket, and I have a special place that I won't tell anybody for my passport.
Yeah, well, those jackets have 19 or 21 different pockets. So
you could steal the jacket and still not find it. I'm telling you, it's like I've lost.
That's
stuff
one problem
in here
with that jacket. Sometimes I can't find what I'm looking for.
Where, it's in here somewhere.
I do have a bunch of Scotty Vests. They're one of my sponsors. Full disclosure.
Yeah, they were one of ours till Scott kind of went off the deep end. But that's another story for another day. Still a friend. I love Scott. So,
but there's also other websites, not just Luggage Hero, by the way, for the service. So there's one called Knock Knock City.
Knock Knock City.
That's for New York.
Okay.
Verto, V-E-R-T-O-E.
Okay.
They offer it by the week or the month, so you don't have to pay by the hour, which is, you know, the other guys.
The month is not bad if you thought you were going to come back, like maybe you business travel when you come to a town for a month, a week every month, as I did, for instance, in Canada. So that is all going to be on our website at techguylabs.com, so you don't have to write all that down.
And there's two more. Nanny Bag.
Yes.
That's overseas. It's not in America. And also Stasher. And that's for overseas and here. And they use businesses like mailbox, et cetera, and food stores and hotels.
But they all have insurance, I'm sure.
I know Luggage Hero has up to $2,000 in insurance. But again,
I'd make sure.
It's like every insurance policy. Yeah. You have to read the fine print very carefully because, you know, certain things are not covered.
And go to johnnyjet.com. I'm sure you have a whole article on this subject.
I do. Actually, I'll tweet it out and I'll put it in the show notes right when I can concentrate on doing two things at once.
So much stuff on here. It's amazing.
And there also, by the way, there are some really good deals out there. I just saw a newsletter. If from San Francisco to Hong Kong, you can fly premium economy on Singapore Airlines, which, you know, is arguably one of the best airlines in the world, for $1,100 round trip.
What?
Includes all taxes.
Oh, man.
You know, coach is usually that price. This is premium economy. And premium economy is not like premium economy in America. This is full on. You get a leg rest. You get an extra wide seat. So that's definitely a good deal. Also from Los Angeles, Swiss Air, they go by the way. They don't go by Swiss Air anymore. LA to Stockholm, $469 round trip. That includes all taxes. New York for our friends on the East Coast, Virgin, $795 South Africa.
This is why I subscribe to Johnny Jet's Travel Deals newsletter. It's free. Get all this stuff in your email. Do you have an app for us, sir?
I do. So, you know, I was supposed to go to Singapore. And when I'm traveling around, I like to use a lot of ride-sharing apps. So I use Lyft and Uber and things like that because it's so much cheaper than a taxi and usually better service and room. So Uber just pulled out of Singapore and Southeast Asia this week.
Wow.
I don't know if you saw that.
No.
But so they actually bought their rival, or they didn't buy it. They put they pumped a lot of money into it, which is called Grab, G-R-A-B.
Yes. That's in Southeast Asia. That's huge.
So if you're in Southeast Asia or going there, you definitely want to download Grab. It runs similar to Uber, you can also get a motorcycle taxi, which I've done in Bangkok.
Get yourself a tuk-tuk on Grab.
No, that's different. You get a real motor. Those are three wheels tuk-tuks, but you get a motorcycle taxi, and that's a real motorcycle. And
what, you sit on the back of it with a guy, really?
Yep, wow, and it can be scary.
Sounds terrifying.
I mean, traffic in Bangkok is horrendous. One time we literally sat 30 minutes and didn't move 2 inches.
Yeah.
And we had to be somewhere. We all jumped on the motorcycle taxis, and I just said, I hope my dad doesn't know about this.
So, I told you, like, son, never to ride a motorcycle in Bangkok. There's one thing I've told you my whole life.
Yeah.
Johnny Jet. You'll find him at Johnny Jet on the Twitter, at Johnny Jet on Instagram, and of course his website, johnnyjet.com. And it's always a pleasure to have you on. Are you leaving town or are you going to stay home for a week?
Well, I just did 5 flights in the last few days.
Yeah.
So I'm here for, I think, at least 3 days, possibly more.
What a life. Thank you, John. Have a great one. Johnnyjet.com. He's crazy. I might have gone on that flight to Singapore. 24 hours in a plane. I can't even imagine. Crazy.
Oh, I would have done it. I just,
crazy.
If I didn't have Jack, I'd love to.
On Echo as they listen, but you know, Alexa, they call it Alexa, and so you need that app on a smartphone. Do you have a computer of any kind?
I have a computer. That was my second question. I have a computer running Windows 8.1.
Let me see if you can use it with a computer. I'm pretty sure you can. Let me see. This is what Amazon says. As long as you have a laptop or some kind of device where you can download the A app, You need the A app to set up your time zone so your alarms will be accurate, so your weather, you have to have location and so forth. So there is, and I think actually you do it through the Amazon website, as I remember. It's nice with a smartphone, but it doesn't require one. You just need to be able to run it, and we'll run on Windows 8.1. In fact, there may be, I should look on my Windows Store, there may even be a Windows Store app for the Echo, which would make it a lot easier. So yeah, you do need an app of some kind to communicate with the Echo, but you don't need to have a smartphone. You can do it on a laptop. Yeah, I don't see an Echo app on the Windows Store, so I guess you'll just have to use the website to do it.
Yeah, and then once
you set it up, then it's very straightforward because you don't need the app anymore. The app is merely to do things like connect it to the Wi-Fi. You have Wi-Fi at home?
Yeah.
So you need the app to set it, because obviously the Echo comes with your Amazon account pre-configured, but it doesn't know things like your Wi-Fi, what time zone you're in, you know, your locale. So once you set all that up, and you can do that at alexa.amazon.com, then you can just, you don't need your computer anymore. You could just use the Echo by voice alone. So it's only for the initial configuration. There's additional configuration you might want to do. For instance, there's a thing called the flash briefing, which is your morning, kind of your morning news. And you could say, you know, good morning, Echo, what's going on? And it'll say, oh, good morning. Here's the time, weather, and here's your flash briefing. And the flash briefing can be configured to have any variety of news sources you choose. So including, by the way, I should say, this show. So, we appreciate it. If you look for Twit, my podcast network, you can get Twit content in your flash briefing. There's quite a bit of stuff available for flash briefing. But then once it's configured, just use it.
I've got it done. And I was just sitting on my windowsill hooked up to a couple of powered stereo speakers that I used to use on the computer, but don't anymore.
Yeah, there's another good use for an Echo. You get the Echo Dot. It's about $30 or $40, depending on whether it's on sale. And with the Echo Dot, you hook that up to a nice set of speakers, and now those speakers are voice controlled. So you can say things like, I did this morning. I said, Echo, listen to the Bare Naked Ladies. And it played me music while I was getting ready for work. That always feels like that's Saturday music for me. I don't know why, but I just feel like that's what tomorrow I'll do Easter Bunny music. And I'm looking right now at alexa.amazon.com, and it is exactly the same as the app. So all of the things you can do in the app, the A Word app, you can do, including seeing what's playing on your, I even see the list of all my Echoes at home on here. So you have complete control just as you would in the Echo app. That's actually nice. I'm glad you asked, because it means people don't have to have, they don't even have to have Windows or any particular computer, because you do this all in your browser. So you can get a Chromebook. You could do this on an iPad. Of course, with an iPad, you can have the Alexa app. Oh, I said the word. Darn it. Sorry. Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, my. We had a caller last week that was asking why my podcast network, and this includes the Tech Guy show, can't be played in an Echo group. And I gave her bad advice, because I tried it, and you're right, it doesn't work. And we've been doing some detective work on that. We haven't yet come up with the right answer. We thought maybe it was something strange about the way we've encoded the audio, but it's not. We're still working on it. We'll fix it. It's our fault, I guess, because we noticed that there are some, it's the podcast play fun, it's the live stream, but there are some other live streams that you can listen to in a group, you know, where you have multiple Echoes and they're all in one group. I have a group, for instance, with all the Echoes in the house called Everywhere. So I can say, you know, Echo, listen to Twit Live, which is our live stream, doing whatever show I'm doing at any given time. I can say, Echo, listen to Twit Live everywhere, and it won't work. I can say, listen to Twit Live, it'll play on one, but it won't on the group. I don't know why. We don't know why we're working on it. It's some strange detective work. I do say, as I mentioned earlier, I do love the Echo, and my mom loves the Echo. It really is great for people who don't want to be, you know, become computer nerds, but want some of the modern functionality of a smartphone or a tablet or a computer. Things like, what's the weather going to be tomorrow? Or what's the weather in Singapore tomorrow? And that kind of thing. And the Echo really does a great job. I highly recommend it. Love it. Our show today brought to you by 23andMe. I gave the Echo a free plug, but 23andMe is one of our sponsors, and we really appreciate that. That helps the show stay on the air. And by the way, I'm a big fan. I've used 23andMe. I started when they first started many years ago. You sent them a vial of spit, believe it or not. That's all they need, just a little bit of saliva, and all your genetics are in there. They can do a genetic, assay, print it up to more than 75 reports you go see on the web. You can get your genetic material, you can download it. They have two kinds of accounts. They have health and wellness and ancestry, and I have to say the ancestry stuff is getting better and better. Imagine going back in time and meeting your ancestors, kind of like that. 23andMe's ancestry service, their enhanced ancestry service, lets you trace your family history from 150-plus regions all over the world. With their new interactive map, they have an ethnicity wheel. I have 4% Neanderthal in me, I'm proud to say. You can discover where around the world your ancestors may have lived, not only in the last couple of centuries, but you can go back 60,000 years and discover the ancient migration paths of your ancestors, how you got here, with more than 5 million people in their family connections database. Opt in and you can connect with DNA family members worldwide. Look, we all have a DNA story. And frankly, isn't that the best story of all, the one about you? It's what makes you you. Find out what your story is at 23andMe. Order your kit at the number 23andme.com/Leo. 23andme.com/Leo. I think you're going to love it. I ended up getting it for everybody in my family. That's fun, too. Then you can share it. My sister and I are going back and forth. It's really interesting. 23andme.com/Leo. And I want to thank him for making the Tech Guy Show possible. On we go to line two. Mike, Tiburon, California. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Leo. Thanks for taking my call. Listen to you all the time. Enjoy it a lot. I'm going to China. I have a Sprint, and I want to know how's the best way to do, number one, messaging, and number two, how can I receive emails, Gmail, if that's at all possible?
Yeah, so the first thing you want to do is find out what services are currently blocked by the Great Firewall of China, because it changes. In fact, I remember going to China a few years ago. Facebook and Twitter were open at the time. Then they had the Uyghur Rebellion, and all of a sudden, I couldn't access Facebook or Twitter. So Wikipedia has a great page called Websites Blocked in Mainland China. Gmail, of course, is blocked. So you won't be able to just go to gmail.com. The Great Firewall of China will say, I actually don't know what happens. It just won't work, I guess. That makes for, you know, some tricky. The way I got around sharing, social sharing, was I set up an account to social share via email, but Gmail wasn't blocked at the time. So now you might want to look at creating an alternative email address that goes to your Gmail. For instance, Yahoo Mail is still not blocked for some reason. So what you could do is create a free Yahoo Mail account, have Gmail fetch the mail, or have it send to Gmail, connect the two so that when you send something from China via Yahoo, it goes, you know, to your Gmail account, that kind of thing. You're going to have to do some workarounds. So the first thing to do is go to it's literally called Websites Blocked in Mainland China Wikipedia page. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, digital photography, smartphones, smart watches, and all that jazz. Our phone number, if you want to call in and talk, is 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. I'd love to hear from you. We could talk high tech. 888-ASK-LEO is the phone number. And we go back to the phones now with Sean, who's in Tampa, Florida. Hi, Sean.
Hey, how are you today, Leo?
I am great. How are you?
Doing well. Looking forward to Easter.
Yeah. Happy Easter weekend.
Thank you. And to you.
Thank you.
Here's a question for you. With regards to your conversation with virtual reality, especially with that new movie out.
Yeah.
I am an architect, and I have invested in some 3D technology that allows you to do the walkthroughs and the spin arounds and all the real life effects for my clients. And the background format is called a skybox. I don't know if that's specific to either Lumen or Enscape, which are the products that I use. But I'd love to be able to go out to a client's land, their area where they're going to actually build, and put together my own skybox, my own background, in order to help give them even more of a sense of what they're going to be looking at as a finished product.
Yeah.
How do I do that? Do you know anything about that?
And yeah, so
I know that there's some out there, but
yeah, the skybox file format is particular to Enscape, I think, but I think it's also easy to convert it to another format. I see that, for instance, game designers use it. So the issue is, what you probably are going to want to look for is a way to convert Skybox to a YouTube video so that they can – and this, by the way, would have a huge advantage for you, because for right now, they have to come to your office, right, and put on the helmet.
Correct.
And look around.
I can send it out it's a proprietary format, but I can send it out on an email, and I can log in and see what the video would be.
So they can do it on a browser as well.
Correct.
Okay. So that might be sufficient. I mean, because all that would happen otherwise is if you converted it to YouTube video, and YouTube and Facebook both support this. This is, by the way, it's called 360-degree video. It is virtual reality in your case because these things never existed, right? They're looking at architectural designs. But once you convert it to Facebook or YouTube, they'll call it 360-degree video. But the nice thing is then they can use an inexpensive Google Daydream or the Samsung Gear VR. They can use an inexpensive visor and put their smartphone in there, go to YouTube, and have the same experience. You could give them a link, for instance.
Right.
And then they could do the same thing.
How about to build your own custom skybox? Do you have any
information? Wouldn't that be cool?
My ultimate goal would be to use the client's property and their surroundings to kind of give them their own personal background.
That's interesting. So you have a skybox and you want to, what's the platform you imagine it on? A VR?
I build everything in Revit.
Okay.
That's an Autodesk product. And then I'll integrate that into Inkscape.
Yep.
And I can load any skybox that I need to in order to try and either match their existing backgrounds, their existing terrain, or I can make my own.
How cool is that?
I'd love to have them make my own. Yeah.
How cool is that? So that really is VR. Now you've got an existing landscape, and you're putting the design in the landscape. Does Inkscape have a player app that just plays it?
Yes. You can actually export I don't know if it's an MP4 or if it's an AVI or what the format is. It may be proprietary to Inkscape, but I can actually record it and do the fly around, do the walkthroughs, and then send that actually out as a video to either my clients or upload it to my website and have them come on and take a look.
So you are able to convert it to a standard video, it sounds like.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I'm looking at Inkscape's knowledge base on using a skybox as a background.
Yes.
That sounds like what you want to do, right?
That's exactly what I want to do. Yeah. And it has a couple of links there where you can go to get some free skyboxes. But, it's like anything.
Oh, I see. I see. So the way they're doing it is you get somebody else's panos or whatever and they say from open
generic ones that you can use.
Yeah, openfootage.net. But yeah, you'd rather go out there, capture the actual client's landscape so that they can see what it would look like in their terrain. I understand that.
Correct. Well,
So that sounds to me like Open Footage probably is using a standard format. So I'm looking at Open Footage to see if they document it. But it's my guess that they're using a standard footage format, some sort of 360-degree footage format. And if that's the case, I'm sure they are, and Inkscape says, here's how you use it as a background, it's just a matter of you figuring out how to take your existing skyboxes and convert it to that format. And
either that or take my own pictures and stitch them together somehow, and that would also be the other alternative.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, okay, so this is another question then, is how do I make a 360-degree image?
Correct.
Yeah, and you can go out, and I mean, this would probably be more than adequate. Go get a Samsung Gear camera, 360 camera, or something similar, and just shoot the image. And those make it very simple, rather than stitching. Okay. You can also stitch, but stitching is never going to be quite as good. These 360-degree cameras are just a few hundred bucks. They're not expensive. And they have big fisheye lenses on them. So what happens is with one shot, you can take a movie or a still. With one shot, this is the Gear. I'm looking at the Gear, Samsung Gear. I think they call it the VR or the 360. But it has two fisheye lenses, one on the front and one on the back. Together, they combine to get 360 degrees, everything, above, below, left, right. So you could go out and take a single still. That is in a proprietary format, but Samsung then offers a tool to convert that into the standard formats that everything else supports. So I've done 360 video that I've posted on YouTube and Facebook. I've done 360 stills. Obviously, you can't just post a 360 still, on Flickr and have people see it. It's not a still. It's a movie. But this Samsung has software that will convert it. Not great software. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 Ask Leo. The slow jazz phone number. Michael's in the Palm Desert. Hey, Michael, Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Hey, thank you, Leo. I started out using computers, I think, in the early 80s at a place where I worked in DOS. What would I have been doing in the early 80s? DOS 3?
Yeah, 3.3. MS-DOS 3.3, you bet. That's okay. The good stuff. And then before that, there was DOS 2 and DOS 1, but 3.3 was where it really started to become something usable.
Well, around about that time, I started using Macintoshes, and I was just so excited. I got the original Macintosh. I think it was a 128K.
Yep.
I think I put extra memory in it, and then it was 512, and then I got a Mac Plus, and then I got a Mac SE. I don't know if you know all those.
Oh, I owned all. Know them. I owned them, baby. I'm right there with you.
Okay. And then a Mac 2, and then there were other later versions of Mac. So, but the bottom line is, at some point, there was a software that Symantec made called Moore.
Yes.
M-O-R-E.
I know the guy who wrote it.
It was the most unbelievably great outliner. There is nothing like it. You can do so much neat stuff so quickly. You can organize your life, your paperwork, your days, your calendar. So, but now I'm working on a PC laptop, a Dell, and for the life of me, I have to go back to my storage garage and whip out the old Mac and get into that more so I can make my schedules. And it's just turning to be too cumbersome. So I thought, well, why can't I get this guy? Is it John Fogman?
No, the guy who wrote Moore was a guy named Dave Weiner, who's a good friend, and incidentally invented podcasting because he wrote the RSS specification and added, at the request of MTV VJ Adam Curry, added enclosures so we could do podcasts. Dave's a legend. Now, I'm going to send you, first of all, to outliners.com, which is Dave's website, where he talks about Moore, Moore's predecessor think tank, and he has written a number of outliners for the web that do much the same thing. But now, are you still on the Mac?
Yeah, I can still use the Mac, but I carry my laptop around with me. I teach substitute teacher at school. I carry it with me.
So do you want a web-based version or do you want a desktop version?
I'd probably rather have a desktop version.
The laptop you carry around, is that a Windows laptop or is that also a Mac?
Yeah, it's a Dell laptop, Windows 7.
Because I tell you, I share your love and veneration for Moore. What an amazing product. Big hat tip. For Dave, outlining changed the world. And, you know, outlining is still widely available on a variety of different platforms. There's also something called mind mapping, which is kind of in some ways a successor to outlining. It's outlining plus, because you then can make a map of all of the notes. So you might want to look at mind map software as well.
Got it.
I use on the Mac a program called, that's another venerable Mac program, but it's still up to date, unlike Moore, called DevonThink. And it has DEVON,
okay.
Think, and DevonThink still has outlining capability, but it's become much more than that. And I think for a teacher especially, I wish it were Windows. It's not. So it's Mac only. I wish it were Windows. A lot of people do outlining in spreadsheets these days, and you know, Google Sheets might be something you could kind of get an outline-y kind of thing working. For people who don't know, outlining is the thing you learned in school, you know, where you have the header that's a Roman numeral 1, and then the subhead, which is the number Arabic number 1, and then the subhead, which is the letter A, and on and on and on, except that outlining on the computer is so much more sophisticated. You can hoist sections up, you can bring sections down, you can move things around. It's a great way to do a to-do list. A lot of to-do lists have outlining functionality as well. I believe, I'm going to look. Yeah, Dave's talking about Moore right here at outliners.com. This is a fairly old site, but it looks like you can still download it. So he's still offering Moore. I don't know how well this would run on a modern Macintosh. It was really designed for probably System 9, right? Mac OS 9. Probably wouldn't run on a modern Mac OS system. But just if you're an Outliner fan, outliners.com. Oh, yeah. I think I just brought outliners.com down. You can go to outliners.scripting.com. Maybe that's the secret on this. I don't know if Dave's keeping it up. But you can read about Outliners, learn more about hierarchy editors. And he does offer an online editor, I think, to this day, called, what is it called? Little Outliner. Boy, that's a great, what would you use? I know people who use, okay, you really want to go old school? Emacs, which is the operating system that pretends to be a text editor, very popular with really hardcore geeks. Emacs has something called org mode, which is exactly what you want. It's an outliner. If you took the time, Emacs, there's very few really. Emacs runs well on Mac and Linux, not so great on Windows, but it is available for Windows. And org mode really is what you want. It's designed to organize your entire life using outlining. I wonder if Dave's still doing, he had an online outliner. Yeah, I guess it was called Little Outliner. Let's see if it's Little Outliner 2. Yeah, littleoutliner.com. Now, that's web-based, but this is the guy who wrote More, so it's going to have most of the functionality of More. You log in through your Twitter account. Dave's been doing that lately, I think mostly because it's easy for him to do the authorization through Twitter, the login. But when you do that, and you do have to have a Twitter account, but you can create a dummy Twitter account just for this purpose. The nice thing about that, it stays persistent. So you can log in on any machine, and your outline will still be there. So, Little Outliner. Is it littleoutliner.com? I'm actually creating an account just so I can play with it and see with it. Dave's amazing. Amazing fellow. I stay in touch with him because he's an inspiration and one of the great guys of the early tech industry who's still around and still creating. Let's go to Temecula, California. Patty's on the line. Hi, Patty.
Hello, Leo. Thank you for taking my call.
My pleasure.
I appreciate you more than you know right now. I'm calling along the 5 North in San Clemente, and it's just awful.
But... Oh, I'm so sorry. Well, I'm glad you had something to listen to anyway.
Yes, beautiful view, though.
Good.
Listen, my question for you is, my daughter is going to be leaving in September to study in London for graduate school for a year. We have...
Wow, you must be so proud. That's awesome.
I am. I'm very, very proud. Thank you. But I still pay her cell phone bill, and she's going to be over there for a year. I don't know if I'm allowed to say the name of the phone company that I have.
Sure. Oh, yeah. We don't have any restrictions on what you can
say.
Okay.
We have Sprint.
Okay.
I've had it since 19... I had a brick when we originally had Sprint.
So Sprint has a really nice plan now for travelers. It might be one of the best. But she's going to be there a long time.
Yes.
So it may not be economical to do this for a long time, but Sprint, it's called, I think, their One World package. And it's actually a really good package. My son used it in Spain, and he was there for a semester. So I know it's economical at least to use it for some length of time. So I'd investigate that. The other option, of course, is for her to get an English open world, not one world, open world. Would be for her to get an English cell phone, an English SIM card. And for that, I'm going to point you to a site called Prepaid with Data. Just Google Prepaid with Data Wiki, because it's a really crazy address. And that will tell you the ins and outs of data in England. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Solo Mads Maddest writer. He's the disco king, still wearing stretch pants.
Yeah.
Yeah. And a polyester shirt unbuckled to the navel. And what is that necklace you're wearing there? Is that your sun sign?
That is my sun sign.
And, of course, the Italian cornu, you got to have that.
I have that, but I'm wearing it in the back now.
Yeah.
Because my best years are behind me.
Yeah. Dick is wearing, as any sensible person in the 21st century would, a plaid flannel shirt.
A plaid flannel shirt.
And he joins us each week, not just to talk about disco, but also to talk about his gadgets. That's why we call him the Gizmo Wizard or the Gizwiz. Each week, Dick comes up with some crazy stuff. But a lot of it's useful. I've purchased a number of things lately.
Yeah, well, this week and next week, I have hunted high and low for travel gadgets.
Oh, for me?
For you.
Yes, because I'm traveling.
Okay, so the first one is not as embarrassing as some of the travel gadgets you and I have talked about.
I still have the pillow that you put your head into and your arms into. And you look like the elephant man, but you sleep very soundly. It's called the ostrich pillow. I have one of those. I don't know if I want to bring that.
Okay. All right, so now people are worried about germs on airline seats. And I did a little research online, and it turns out that airliners are supposed to be wiped down completely after every 100 hours of flight.
What?
That's a lot of flying.
That's like 20 cross-country flights.
It's a lot.
Think of the germs.
Okay, so that's where seat sitters
comes in.
Seat sitters.
Seat sitters. So it's a little kit. It's just $15. It comes with a cloth seat cover that with elastic in the back. So just about 2 inches of it will the person behind you see it. And it's 24 inches wide, and I went on Seat Guru, and almost every seat in business and coach is 24 inches or less. Now, in first class, I don't think you're going to want to drag out your seat sitter.
You don't need it in first class. They you wipe it down it. Every 50 hours.
Every 50 hours, whether it needs it or not. Exactly. So they make two different kits. So it comes with a little mask. It comes with the elasticized seat sitter. It comes with a...
The mask is not for your eyes. It's for your mouth and nose.
It's for your mouth, to breathe through, okay? And then it comes with a little cover for the snack table. The little cover for the snack table doesn't have any elastic on it or anything.
If you pull this out, people are going to think you're nuts. You're just like Mr. – you're going to think you're Howard Hughes.
Yeah, well, and nuts, yes. They say it protects against peanut allergens.
Oh, everything. Right. That's what you say. You know, that's okay. You could say, oh, I'm sorry. I'm just allergic to peanuts. And nobody will think twice.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now, if you want people to think twice, don't go to Amazon. So these are both on Amazon. They make two versions, the kitty version and the adult version. I bought both, and to tell you the truth, they seem identical.
Oh,
the kids version is supposed to have crayons, which it does. But when I opened the adult version, the crayons fell out. So
there's crayons in both?
Yes. My guess is it's easy to package them that way
and
just put the label on whether you ordered kids or adults.
Right. Oh,
but if you go to their website and you want to be dorky and you're getting married, you can get them that says bride on the back.
Oh, how funny.
Strangely, they don't offer groom.
No, I wonder why. Wow.
Right.
Wow.
So
the wedding edition.
The wedding editions. But
instead of bride, they have king.
Yeah, that's going to be good on an airplane.
King bride and king and queen. Or bride king and king. Yeah, that'll really impress people.
Yeah.
I'm going to get Mr. and Mrs. for me and Lisa.
Oh, there you go. It's going to cost you an extra $5. It'll be $20.
The Mr. and Mrs.?
Yeah.
I'm getting the kid version.
Or if you want to spend $30, you can have whatever you want on it.
Oh, I could have Leo and Lisa engraved on it. They'll really think we're nuts.
That's what I ordered. Just to make brownie points.
Oh, man, that's hysterical. Can you reuse it?
Yes, reusable, washable.
Is it made of – what is it made of?
You know what? Nowhere on – it says 100% recyclable, non-woven fabric. That's the total description.
Well, it's
on
like
the
rubber.
Package, on the website. No, it's a very soft kind of fabric, but
– oh, there it is. You've got it.
Yeah, I have some of it here. So – that's what it looks like. It is cozy and comfortable and warm. I mean, they don't make any health claim out to the fact you know that you're putting something clean
down. Johnny Jet literally takes out the Clorox wipes and wipes off every surface.
But really? For the entire plane?
The whole plane. He goes through the thing.
Well,
he
really is.
It's 100 hours. I'm wiping it down. No, he does. But this saves – because you can't wipe down the cloth seats. So this
This is an easy way to do
it. Is it made of fine Corinthian leather? Because it's
– No. The $1,000 version is –
bring your own leather seats.
Bring your own leather. Yeah.
That's really interesting. Really interesting.
Seat sitters.
Clean, healthy, fun.
Yes, exactly.
You find out more about it at gizwiz.biz, GIZWIZ.BIZ. That's Dick's website. Click the Gizwiz Visit the Tech Guy button to see that and all the products he's mentioned on our show. But he has a lot of other shows, including his own Gizwiz podcast at gizwiz.tv. And no matter what, you've got to play the What the Heck Is It game because it's a chance to win an autographed copy of Mad Magazine. All you have to do is identify this close-up picture of a gizmo or a gadget. It's actually, I figured it out, it's the Iron Giant's fingernail pairing.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
After seeing Ready Player One, now I know what it is. no, it's not. But what is it? If you you get a Mad Magazine, you can be in the drawing for Mad Magazine if you've got the
You'll
right
be getting
answer.
Mad number one from L.A.
Oh, are they renumbering as well as
– They are renumbering it. I found
out
at Comic-Con.
Number one? Oh, they want to make it a collectible.
Exactly.
Mad number one?
Yeah.
You're not old enough to have been in Mad number one, the real –
Oh, no. I was 10
was
years
–
10 or 11 years, yeah.
Yeah. But what was the first Mad Magazine you were in?
Issue 69.
That's pretty early on.
That's pretty early
on. What was the last Mad Magazine that came out of New York?
The last one that we did out of New York was 550.
Wow.
So I've been in like
more than
400
issues
straight. Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
Dick DiBartolo, he was one of the original, the usual gang of idiots, the original guy. He's they call him Mad's Maddest Writer. And he's our Gizwiz. We love him. Gizwiz.biz. Thank you, Dickie D.
Okay, buddy. See you next week.
All right. Well, you're just between us. Stick around so we can record some more for my trip coming up. Don't tell anybody. We're just going to do a little bit of that. Meanwhile, back. Now you can listen again. Back on the show, it's time to mention one of our fabulous sponsors. We wouldn't be here without folks like 23andMe. You know 23andMe. I've talked about them a lot. I've been talking about them for years because I was one of the first users. I subscribed to 23andMe when they first came around. I love this. You can still do it. In fact, they're better than ever. They get better all the time. It's one of the things I've really appreciated about 23andMe. It was about 5 or 6 years ago. They send you a little vial. You spit into it because your saliva contains your DNA. They analyze it. The 23 pairs of chromosomes, that's where the 23 comes from. One pair from mom, one pair from dad that make you unique, one and only you. And as time goes by, the reports, there's new stuff all the time because they discover more stuff about genetics. Then they match it up to your particular gene and they say, oh, you know, you're likely to have a cleft in your chin, things like that. Or maybe not. You're less likely to have it. One of the things I love is the enhanced ancestry service. This is another new thing they've added. More to explore than ever before about your past. You could trace your family history from 150 different regions. They've got this great interactive map and an ethnicity wheel. So you can really see what your people, where your people come from. You can even go back in time, not just a couple of centuries, but that tens of thousands of years to see how your family came to wherever they ended up a couple of hundred years ago. My family, for instance, migrated out of Western Africa up through the Middle East into Europe. Your map might be different. Find out. We all have a DNA story. You can learn yours at 23andMe. Here's how you get it, the kit. Go to 23andme.com/Leo. And you can find out all you want to know about what makes you you. 23andme.com/Leo. You'll be glad you did it. I liked it so much. I got it from my mom, my sister, my dad, my wife, her family. We've all done it. It's really cool. 23andme.com/Leo. Are we out of time? Oh, I'll be back tomorrow, Easter Sunday. I hope you will, too. We'll talk more about tech. Meanwhile, have a great Geek Week. Leo Laporte.
The Tech Guy.